Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. You know, Abraham Lincoln once said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." We don't know yet the results of last night's presidential election, but we know the vote shows a nation divided. And with Massachusetts going 66% Biden and 32% Trump, New Hampshire split at 53% to 46% Biden over Trump, that is true here at home, too. So today, while we await the outcome and potential breaking news, really, at any minute, we wanted to focus on dialogue and understanding, and that includes with you. How are you today? And what's on your mind and in your heart as we sit with both some knowledge and some uncertainty? Are you feeling hopeful or anxious or vindicated? How do we move forward together, and do you think we can? Call 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And while you start dialing, we're going to start the dialogue with Chris Pappas, who represents New Hampshire's 1st District. Pappas won re-election last night over Republican challenger Matt Mowers in a district that flipped between Democrats and Republicans 5 times in a row. Now he has to determine how best to serve his whole district in this moment. Congressman Pappas, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon, Tiziana. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I appreciate you joining us. I want to congratulate you on your victory. And let's just start with, how are you feeling today?
Well, I think like most Americans right now, just a little tired and a little ready for all the votes to finally be counted and for us to try to do the tough work of bringing our country closer together. I mean, I think that was what I heard resoundingly from the voters of my district yesterday. They picked and choose between candidates of different party, and at the end of the day, they really want us to focus on solutions. And there's so much that stands in front of us, from this pandemic to an economic crisis and so many other issues that hang in the balance. And, you know, we need to get to the tough work of making some progress and figuring out how we can not always agree necessarily, but find ways to have mutual understanding, respect, and, you know, move the country forward. So I think that's what people were hoping for when they showed up in record numbers yesterday. And I think, you know, as the ballots continue to be counted across the country, I hope that's borne out in the results.
You know, last night, I think I probably went through all the emotions at different times. Honestly, probably the entire contents of my kitchen cupboards at one point or another. What was your reaction in seeing the national results come in throughout the evening and late into the night?
Well, you know, we had kind of a local focus. So, you know, I was hearing things sort of in the background in terms of what was going on across the country. And, you know, we were concerned about making sure that, you know, all the votes were counted in New Hampshire. And we got a pretty quick, swift result in our race and in races up and down the ticket, which was good. But, you know, I think that, you know, we were warned about the need to be patient and to try to take things in balance. And I really just have confidence that, you know, once all the votes are cast, we're going to all have a result that we can accept. We will have a peaceful transition of power if there's a new president. These are the norms of our country. And I think, you know, where there's so much that's been questioned with respect to our democracy, it's up to all of us to do our part to try to make sure we can move forward in a way that, you know, respects those traditions, respects, you know, the rule of law and our democratic values. I think that's why people were turning out in record numbers yesterday.
We're talking to Congressman Chris Pappas of New Hampshire's 1st District. Congressman, our senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks, borrowed a phrase from a former speaker of the New Hampshire State House and referred to your district as one of the swingiest in the country. Mm-hmm. You've now won back-to-back races, but the district went back and forth for 12 years. So I wonder, and you have a Republican governor, and the state was split. What imperatives does that create for you as a congressperson? And do you feel like you can meet those imperatives in this moment?
Well, really, you know, over the last couple years, we've just focused on how can I do the job of being a representative, and not just in Washington, but here in New Hampshire. And, you know, the ways that we've been called to serve our constituents have been extraordinary over the last few months. I can't tell you the number of calls our office gets from folks who are experiencing loss, either the loss of a loved one, they might be losing a job, they're worried about losing their, you know, local small business, losing their health care. So, you know, it's about service. And I think that's where we have to get back to in our political system. It shouldn't just be about scoring points. It shouldn't just be about playing politics with issues. We can't lose sight of the fact that we're talking about people's lives here. And the gravity of the decisions that are made in state houses across the country in Washington, D.C., have a direct impact on people. And so, you know, as someone who, you know, grew up in New Hampshire and has worked in a family restaurant business prior to my running for Congress in 2018, to me, I see public service as an extension of, you know, working for the community. And I think there are lots of folks in Washington that want to try to get it right and try to focus on constituent needs. And as we move forward through some tough months here in the winter, I think that's one way we can help restore confidence in our political system and try to bring people together around solutions that will actually make a difference.
This word service really resonates with me, and it strikes me it's not a word I've heard a lot in conversations I've had with all kinds of community members and community leaders, not because people aren't dedicated to it, but it hasn't been our focus. So, okay, you go back to Congress. Chances are in some way Washington is divided. You know, maybe the Senate and the House aren't held by the same parties, or the White House isn't held by the same party as Congress. What does service across those aisles look like in a way that is best for the people of New Hampshire and the American people right now?
Well, you know, where the rubber hits the road in Washington is through the committee work. And so, you know, I'm lucky to serve on a couple committees that tend to be more bipartisan. You might not hear a lot about, you know, the proceedings and the work that we do on TV, but in the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and in the Veterans Affairs Committee, we tend to see issues as Americans first and not necessarily as Republicans or Democrats. And we need more of that, frankly. So really, it comes down to relationship building, understanding who the other person is, you know, having a fundamental belief that you might not have all the answers, but that in conversation, by keeping an open mind, you might come up with a better idea or a better way to craft legislation. I can speak to specific examples of how I've done that over the last couple years. And that's really how the process should work. So, you know, I think it's all about trying to bridge the divide, build relationships. You know, I think we've got a better shot at the state and local level of accomplishing that, but that should be able to happen in Washington, D.C., too. And I think if we can ratchet back the tension, lower the temperature in the room a little bit, and just try to, you know, see eye to eye and understand that we're really all in this together. We all share a lot of the same values and, you know, goals. You know, hopefully that helps us, you know, achieve consensus. And it's got to happen, you know, not just when the new Congress takes over in January, but we've got so much on the table here these last few months, especially when it comes to COVID relief legislation. We can't afford to see this continue to be stalled and fall victim to, you know, the political paralysis in Washington. We've got to get some relief out to people who are hurting right now and to our communities that are struggling so we can stay ahead of this virus. So that, I hope, is a top priority for all members of all political stripes when we get back to Washington in another week and a half.
That is New Hampshire Congressman Chris Pappas, who was reelected yesterday to represent New Hampshire's 1st District. Congressman, congratulations on your win, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Let's turn to a couple of callers before I turn to our next guest. How are you out there? What's on your mind today as we await the unfolding election results? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Betty is on the line from Cambridge. Betty, what's on your mind?
Well, I really appreciate the previous, you know, congressman's conversation with you, all the, you know, balm for the soul. But I just have to tell you that I'm kind of over it.
What do you mean,
I
Betty?
I feel like we are always the ones as Democrats to talk about peace, love, and understanding, respect, dignity, and the other party doesn't act anything like that. And I fully expect and would hope that Biden would be unequivocal in his complete and total take power, do what you need to do, do the executive orders, and act as if the other party acts. You know, I just am completely done with the always taking the high road. I think,
Betty,
we need to be as powerful as possible.
Thanks, Betty. I appreciate your call. I hear your frustration and anger, and this is why we're checking in with people today. I'd love to grab one more person here. Let's talk to Linda in Scituate. Linda, go ahead.
Hi. I'm from Scituate. I'm actually in North Dakota at the moment. I've been out here for about a week helping my dad recover from a surgery, and this is a deeply red state out here. And it's hard to believe that a few years ago there were Democratic governors and Democratic senators, and the way things have gone over the last 4 years, the shift that's been so far to the right, it's going to be a relief to get back to Massachusetts. I'm feeling better. I'm feeling more comfortable about how things have gone. I think a lot of people were hoping for a bigger display of something that would have reflected the approval rating or lack of approval rating of President Trump. But watching what's happened out here over the last few years, I was almost worried that was going to start to spread out, to more of the rest of the country, these very deep-rooted conspiracy theory level, thoughts.
And, so I'm going to take it back from you there, Linda, just because I have a lot of voices I want to get in. But before I do, I did want to ask you, how's your dad? Oh, we lost her. Shoot. All right. Linda, I'm sorry. I wanted to know how your dad was before we lost you. I'm sorry about that. We have more calls on the line, but I also have another guest waiting who I think has a lot of perspective to help us as we talk with each other today about how we're feeling. And that is Reverend Mariama White Hammond, a pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, a political activist, a really good friend of the show. Reverend Mariama, I appreciate you joining us. Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
So you're hearing our listeners already. I want to give you a chance to sort of stack how you're feeling next to what we just heard from those first couple listeners.
Yeah. So I appreciated all of those perspectives because I think they mirror the challenges and the many different perspectives we have in our country. As I thought about it, I do lean Democratic, and so I have been mostly hoping that Vice President Biden would win. But I think at the end of the day, I'm not sure that I feel like if he wins, that's enough. Because I think what has been clear is that we are a deeply divided country. We don't even have agreement on some basic facts. I've heard a couple of folks that I know tell me that after the election, COVID was going to go away because it was all set up to just take Trump down. And so that's just a very different way of seeing what's happening in the world. And I think, I have been saying to my parishioners the quote that you said earlier, which is that a house divided against itself can't stand. And the reality is the tension between us is so deep. And I guess my takeaway in this moment is that the political system can't fix this. That the work is ours to do. And the question is, how the heck do we do that?
Right. Right. All right. Let me grab a couple more calls here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Kathleen on the line from Marlboro. Kathleen, what's on your mind?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Perfect. Yeah. I love the fact that you asked how are we doing? Honestly, I'm kind of a mess. I mean, this is tough. We've all been living already the last 4 years with not just systemic racism, but systemic hate and systemic fear. And so that's been going on for the last 4 years. And then we have COVID, and now we have a very contentious election. So I think it's been tough to stay calm. It's been tough to be rational. It's been tough to be able to relax. And, I really thought that Vice President Biden would be much more in the lead. I do think he's going to pull this out. But I think, that's going to be the biggest challenge is how do we help, first of all, save lives? I've lost my father. my aunt and my job to COVID. And
I
even have a memorial set up on my mailbox for my father. And I thought if everybody did that, we'd all see how many people have been lives lost with this pandemic. It is so real. I want to see my grandchildren again. I don't want to see on FaceTime my 2.5-year-old daughter, granddaughter, going to the park with a face mask on. It's really hard. And
so, Kathleen, let me take it back from you there. There's so much more to talk about it. And your grief and your pain are real. You've sounded a number of themes there that I want to make sure that we can pick up on, and that I do think we're going to have some other callers who want to talk about, too. That sense of loss, that sense that we're in danger, that sense that our children are missing some important aspects of life. Reverend Mariama, I will turn it back to you there, because I also want to be mindful and thoughtful that we don't know the outcome of the election yet, and we are not forecasting it, but we do know that we are deeply divided on how we feel about how the president has handled the pandemic, where we are in systemic racism, where we are in policing. We're not all on the same page about that, but we all are needing to find a way to move forward together as a country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the key word is, quite frankly, I think we are all operating from a place of fear. And fear that the other side, whichever side you're on, is destroying this country. And that, I just don't see how we can do anything worthwhile if we wake up afraid of each other every day. And fear is a powerful emotion. Like it, I know it, it's very real. The only thing I know that overcomes fear is love. And one of the hardest times to access love is when you're afraid. So we have a really tough road ahead of us. And again, I'm not predicting what will happen in the election, but what I do know is whoever wins, it's going to be by a relatively small majority one way or the other. And I think we're a nation of fearful and hurting people. And that is not what produces the best of who we are.
We are checking in with each other this hour as we await results in an election where we don't know the outcome. But we do know that yesterday's vote showed us that we're divided and we have work to do. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join this conversation. And our friend of the show, Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, is still here with us. Thanks for staying with us, Reverend Mariama.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, let's grab another call here. Let's go to Jen in Andover. Jen, hi there. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I'm glad you took my call. I want to kind of circle back to what the Reverend had to say. Like, today I'm feeling nauseously optimistic. I went to bed feeling really, really unhappy because I just couldn't believe that here we are, you know, with the way the election is shaking out, that I can't believe that half this country is okay with the policies that this administration has had. And it's been hard because I have a relatively small handful of friends who are Republicans, and we just can't talk about this. But it goes back to love, because I love my friends, and I want a way out of this. But I know that Biden would be better for this country. So that's why I am nauseously optimistic.
Well, that is my new catchphrase for the day, Jen. I'm stealing it. I hope you don't mind.
It's not patented. Go for it.
We'll take it. And Reverend Mariama, I want to turn back to you. You know, what Jen is saying is so important. And in a minute, we're going to turn to the leaders of a couple of communities who went blue and red. Because it's not just that the country is divided, but we have neighbor to neighbor, community to community, who are feeling very differently about the moment we're in, what the right solutions are, who's doing a good job. Again, as a pastor and as somebody focused on love, how do you think about that? And how do we find these common places, these path forward, like Jen's talking about?
Yeah, and I think part of it is we have to start from the place that recognizes digging a deeper hole will not get us anywhere. I resonate with the, you know, desire, like, do unto others as they've done unto you. I resonate with that. It is our human, there's some piece of that that's part of our human nature, except it just doesn't work. And that mentality has
do unto others doesn't work?
Do unto others as they have done unto you doesn't
oh,
work.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So let's make that clear. Not as you would want them to do, but if you do mm-hmm. just back to them what they've done to you, if you're just eye for an eye, we will all be blind together. And I think we, I understand that sentiment, and we are at a precipice. And I think we all have to commit, as Jen has said, to saying, like, I don't want to go over this edge, because maybe I'll land on top of you. And I'll get a, you know, I'll only have broken a few bones, but we're not going to come out of that ahead. So I think at the end of the day, part of it starts from all of us saying, just getting to the point where my group wins enough to take the reins of power isn't enough. There's a much deeper conversation and project required in this country at this time. And so I'm hoping all of us, right, left, Republican, Democrat, we've got to raise the bar on where we need to go as a country, because we are digging a hole and it's not good. And yes, maybe your candidate lands on top in this particular election, but in the large scheme of things, we're all in a dangerous place. And I think we have to commit collectively to walk back from the brink.
800-423-8255. Let's go to Jack in Somerville. Jack, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, I am an 18-year-old college student, and watching this election has been really frustrating for me in terms of the, yes, turnout is higher this year, but looking at Massachusetts, looking at some of the ballot questions, the number of people who don't vote or who vote without the information necessary is really disheartening for me, especially my own cohort of young people. And I'm really looking for changes to the electoral system where we're instituting popular vote, ranked choice voting, and getting away from a system of punditry where we're only looking at, you know, a couple counties in Pennsylvania to decide it for the rest of us. I think the American people know where we need to go. We love each other. We love our country. The problem is division sowed by, you know, the powerful and through systems such as the Electoral College.
Mike, thank you so much. And thank you for reminding us that we do love each other. And Reverend Mariama, there is this split between the everyday person and the powerful. Jack was expressing some frustration there about that. We have so often in our lives heard all politics are local. The grassroots is where the community is. What's the grassroots beginning to common cause and common ground here in the Commonwealth, for example?
Well, I think, you know, I agree with a lot of what Jack is raising. I think that a two-party system is pretty toxic. I think it leads us to either-or binary thinking as opposed to creating a menu of ideas and a much more robust conversation. So I do think that our system, including the Electoral College and a series of things, are not the best way to bring out the best in us. That being said, I do think part of the work, or we will have more success in organizing locally, looking at everything from our city councils to our state legislatures, where retail politics and building at the grassroots and having dialogue and conversation is more possible than at sort of the bigger federal level. So I think that a lot of us really have to ask, how do we reinvigorate our local processes and create opportunities for dialogue? Quite frankly, there's the opportunities for dialogue right here in Massachusetts. I think we're going to have the opportunity to look at that later on in the show. But I don't know how many Massachusetts people are in conversation with New Hampshire folks, and they're, you know, pretty close by. So I do think a lot of energy went into this election, and we unfortunately have a tendency to get all riled up for the election and then be like, "Whoo, we're done." But I think the real work, regardless of the outcome, starts when we take much more seriously building with our neighbors at the grassroots level and creating alternative systems to the two-party either or system that we have right now. I was sad that ranked choice voting didn't quite move ahead, because I think it creates some opportunities for new dialogues and new systems.
You know, these election maps I referred to really did show that town by town, city by city, we may be in a different place. We may be red or blue. So as part of our search for understanding, we wanted to hear about the needs, priorities of communities that went both directions. And first up, we have, welcoming back to the show, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Mayor Walsh, welcome.
Thank you. And it's great to be on with my dear friend, the Reverend Hammond, Marianne White Hammond. She's a great person, and thank you. It's great to hear her talking. She's an amazing spiritual leader in the city of Boston, an amazing leader in the city of Boston. So
Mayor Walsh, and she's talking with our callers today. I mean, our lines have been full since the beginning of the show with people just with very strong emotions. What's on your mind about the national election today as it continues to unfold?
Well, first and foremost, before I even get into the numbers, it's just amazing how truly divided we are. And I heard a little bit of your last comment there, how divided we are as a country. And I do think we have to find some center ground for all of us to work with each other. You see this national voting. I think, you know, Vice President Biden, I think, has around 60 million people. Donald Trump has 57 million people. So it's true. And, you know, it kind of surprises me when I look at the messaging that Donald Trump has been putting out in the last 3.5 years. I can't imagine that many people felt that he should be reelected, and I'm a Biden person. But in saying all that, you know, we have work to do as a country. We have work to do as a society. I think that, you know, this last year with coronavirus and with systemic racism and the divisions that we've seen, we know that. And I think we all acknowledge, or everyone should acknowledge, that there's work to do. And now we have to roll our sleeves up and move forward. As far as the election goes, I mean, I'm looking at the states right now that are still not called yet. It feels, you know, I'm a Biden person, so, you know, it's great to see the vice president leading in Nevada, leading in Arizona, leading in Michigan, and clearly those three states, if they get called for the vice president, he's the next president of the United States of America. That we still, you know, if you're a Donald Trump supporter and you happen to be listening, obviously Georgia is encouraging, but you're concerned about losing ground there. North Carolina is encouraging, and Pennsylvania is encouraging, but you need one of those other states I mentioned in the Biden column that's in his column right now. And I think that going to bed last night, it felt like, you know, Donald Trump had momentum, and it was, for me, it was a lot like 2016. And when I woke up this morning and turned it back on, you know, it was a different feeling, and I feel good
a little
today.
More like 2000.
I feel good today. And in 2000, I was in West Virginia, election day. I went to bed, and Al Gore was leading, and I woke up, and, you know, they'd taken Florida away from Al Gore, and that went on for months, and that was a tough election as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's been on my mind, Mayor Walsh, is a global pandemic implies that we are having a global experience. And yet we are not all having the same experience around the pandemic. And one of the challenges is getting people to act like they're having the same experience, and we have shared causality. You have a new initiative about getting people tested that has a chance to call people to behave for each other in a shared experience of this pandemic. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, what we want to do is we want to test as many people as possible for the coronavirus, and we want to be able to have an accurate number of what the coronavirus is in the city of Boston. The governor came down with some tougher restrictions the other day, suggested curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., and then also wearing masks even when you're not near people. And there's so much emotion around the coronavirus, but the virus is real. You know, we've had 220,000+ Americans lose their life because of the virus. And you know, everyone has – it's become politicized almost, and partly because of Washington, and partly because of just the place we are in this country. So what we want to do here is really, you know, encourage people to get tested, but also encourage people to – protect themselves. And if they don't feel they have to protect themselves, then we're asking you of the courtesy of your fellow citizens and the people walking down the street and the folks that you come in contact with. And that's what we want to do here. I mean, it's within our grasp to get this virus under control. We could do that. If we don't, the experts have said that we're going to see increases here in the month of November and December, and we'll end up having to shut businesses down again. And that's not what anybody wants to do here.
So how do we model city to city, town to town in the Commonwealth, using the coronavirus both as the imperative that it is, but as an understanding that it is a shared experience? How do we model regional coordination and regional testing and those kinds of things to put everyone on the same page?
Well, I'll tell you, in the beginning of coronavirus, if you go back to February, March, I mean, we were all on the same page, and we were all talking about nobody really understood what the impact of coronavirus was, and everyone, you know, we had to shut businesses down, everyone stayed home, and we were supporting each other. And as we think about coming out of this, you know, I think our attention span in some cases is really short. And we think that, you know, now it's November and we should be on to something else. But a global pandemic doesn't operate like that. And, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to mayors from around Massachusetts. I was on a call last week, and the governor came on it. And we all understood the importance of the decision that the governor made. And we were supportive of it. And I think that I'm on calls with mayors from around America, and I was on a text chain last night. And we were basically saying, regardless of what happens in the election, that we have to step up in a bigger way, and we have in a bigger way, about this country. And I think that not just elected leaders, we just need society as society to need to work better with each other. And the divisiveness, this year has been really challenging for a lot of people, I'll be honest with you. And I'm a mayor, so it's been challenging for me as well. And the divisiveness, you just scratch your head sometimes saying, you know, why do we automatically go to, we have to pick a side? And I think that, you know, listen, I'm a progressive elected official. I've always been progressive, and I believe in all of that, all of the rights that people should have, and I will fight them to the end. But I also think that we have to have more conversations, and we're not having that right now.
Mayor Walsh, in our last time, one of the things that's been on my mind is we know that globally, populations are moving to cities. And one of the things that we saw, if looking at election maps last night, and again, the results aren't done. We don't know who won yet. But we did see that there are divides in perception of what the issues are, the solutions are, who's good and bad, right and wrong, between our cities and our rural communities. And as a leader of a big city in a state that is far-flung, how do you think about that? And how do we begin to create a sense of shared community again across this more rural-urban divide?
I think on the political landscape, we need to, elected officials, Democrats or Republicans, need to spend a little more time talking to each other about finding common ground. And I think that has certainly not been the case in Washington in quite some time. The night that President Obama was elected President of the United States, the Republican leadership was talking about ruining his presidency, and that was before he even got sworn in as president. That can't be the starting point, and I think that we have to do a better job as a party system to work and find common grounds where we can find common grounds. Coronavirus is a perfect example of common ground. It impacts Republicans, Democrats, Independents. It impacts conservatives and progressives, and it impacts everyone. We have to find that common ground. I think first and foremost. Secondly, as a society, I think we also have to find that common ground. It just, you know, I know that people are tired, and this year has been really hard on a lot of people's psyche, and the stress of the virus and the stress of systemic racism being front and center every day. And we have work to do there. We have lots of work we need to do to be a just society. And I think that it's better when we collectively work together, even if we don't necessarily agree with each other's philosophy. But how do we better work together as a society? That's what we need to do happen here. And you see it in these maps. You just pointed out, you know, you look at the large centers where the population is, for the most part, voted for Joe Biden last night. And the rural areas voted for Donald Trump. And part of that is messaging. Part of that is it's politics, obviously, and maybe philosophy on different issues. But we still have to do a better job reaching out across this country to support one another. The division doesn't help our country. It clearly doesn't. I mean, today we have rallies in Boston. In a little while, we're going to have a rally at the Common and marches and stuff. And, you know, we have two sides. There's always two sides. Mm-hmm. You know, and I appreciate that. Listen, coming out of a labor background, I mean, there's all, you know, there's always that type of, you know, sometimes there's that back and forth. But we do have to do a lot better job as a society to work with each other. At the end of the day, when times are tough, everyone rallies around each other, whether it's the, you know, the coronavirus, the marathon bombing, or whatever it might be. It's important that we continue to rally around each other.
That is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. I really appreciate you engaging in this particular conversation with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to another call, 800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Matt on the line from Fitchburg. Matt, what's on your mind today?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Long-time listener here. I just want to give full disclosure. I'm a Trump supporter. Little craziness going on this last 24 hours, but I just wanted to touch on just the fact that, look, I mean, it's Trump, you know, he's real flashy guy. You know, he's definitely muffed some things up over the past 4 years. But just kind of from my neck of the woods, a lot of the stuff I'm hearing is, you know, just the constant from the beginning from the media, just the stuff that was thrown at him. And I just don't see why people are surprised that, you know, Trump supporters came out and they showed up on Election Day. That's all I wanted to say.
Matt, I am so glad you called, and thank you for being a longtime listener of the show. I appreciate that, too. All right, so we were going to bring leaders of two communities. We had Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Boston went blue. We're now going to welcome, Town Administrator Andrew Sheehan. I lost my place there for a second. Andrew Sheehan is the Town Administrator of Middleton, Massachusetts, which went red for President Donald Trump. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
I appreciate you engaging with us here. You know, Middleton was interesting. You were a split community, 217 votes more for President Trump than Vice President Biden. Does that division surprise you, and how do you feel about it?
It's really pretty symptomatic or emblematic of what the community has been historically in recent years. It has leaned red in the last several presidential elections. It tends to be a conservative community, and so the results yesterday were not that surprising to me. It's getting a little less red, I guess you could say, as time goes on and the community turns over. There's certainly been a transition in the community. But it is still a conservative place. There's a strong sort of don't tread on me ethic here that has been in place for a long time.
You know, I want to note that you are an apolitical appointee. It's not, you didn't run with a party and get elected to this role. I imagine that is both sometimes liberating and challenging. I want to zero in on this don't tread on me ethic that you just talked about, because I think you heard our conversation with Mayor Marty Walsh, and he was talking about both how independent we are, but in the era of coronavirus, how much we have to recognize our interdependence and maybe scale back on our independence a little to preserve and protect each other. What is that conversation like in Middleton?
Well, you know, the mayor brought up some good points about the need to work together, and you know, if we can't find common ground and put aside our differences to battle something like coronavirus, it's hard to imagine how we're going to put our differences aside for the sort of day-to-day operation. And so in a way, in a community like Middleton, it's a little bit easier because local politics is nonpartisan. It's right in our charter, which is our enabling document, that that elections are nonpartisan. So we don't have Republican selectmen and Democrat selectmen and Green Party selectmen. We just have selectmen, and so that sort of takes away some of the posturing, if you will, that I think people sometimes feel a need to. Embrace or hide behind. And so it makes it a little bit easier, I think, for us to have more open conversations, more honest conversations here than maybe we're seeing at the state level and the national level.
What do you think are the common ground policy issues that you make progress on as a community in Middleton, and that are issues that can bring us together and we can make progress on across the Commonwealth?
Well, you really have to find the things that tie us, the things that benefit us all, or that we can see the benefit of. Education is a pretty good example at the local level, and we can all kind of touch it and feel it. And then that translates on a statewide basis as well. It just gets harder as you increase the size and the scope and magnitude to find those common areas that we can draw people together in. And I think I don't pretend to know the answer to it. The reason that it started. But if you go back 75, 80 years, if we were this divided through World War II, we would have been in a really bad place. And so we have to figure out a way to work through it and find the common ground that can allow us all to work together.
And that is Town Administrator Andrew Sheehan from the town of Middleton, Massachusetts. I'm sure today was very busy. I appreciate you taking time to engage in this conversation with us. Thank you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
It's the day after the national election. The results are still in question, and we have spent this hour talking with elected officials, community leaders, and you about how we can focus on dialogue and understanding, because we do know that we are a nation divided. I want to go straight to the phones here, grab a couple calls, 800-423-8255. We've got Lennon on the line from Roslindale. Lennon, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just want to preface by saying I'm a little nervous, so I apologize if this comes out kind of crudely. I started listening about halfway
through. Just don't
swear
and you'll be great, Lennon.
yeah, no, you got it. The conversation around the election in this hour's programming, where I fully agree we are a nation divided, it lacks specificity. And I think that Trump's base is specifically bigoted, transphobic, homophobic, and racist. There are people, some of which are armed right-wing militias, that do not believe Black Lives Matter, that do not believe trans lives matter, that do not believe Indigenous rights matter. And so this language that's being used about coming together, I feel respectfully, really falls short of what's actually going on in this country. How do you ask somebody to come together with somebody who doesn't think their life matters and who presently hunts them down, kills them?
Lennon, I can both hear your pain, and I appreciate you raising a set of issues that are at the fault line, really at the fault line of where we are as a country right now. This is a chance for me to bring back on Reverend Mariama White Hammond, who's been with us all hour, patiently in and out of the conversation as we've talked to lots of people. Reverend Mariama, I want to give you a chance to talk directly to what Lennon was just saying.
Yeah. So as a Black woman, I definitely sympathize, recognize, have lived through the concern, the fear. My mother-in-law lives in Michigan. She lives outside of Detroit. And some of the folks that were involved in the plot to kill Governor Northam live in communities adjacent to hers.
I think you meet Gretchen Whitmer, actually, of Michigan, right?
Yes. So
okay,
some
sorry,
of the folks that plotted to kill her or kidnap her live close to the community that my mother-in-law lives in. And I tried to convince her to come here. I did not want her there. I am concerned. So I'm not in denial about the fact that there is an element within that group that espouses violence, has access to guns, is overtly bigoted and racist. Definitely true. That being said, I also have taken some time to talk with a lot of Trump supporters, and that's just not the majority of them. They are not the majority of Trump supporters the same way that like Antifa is not the majority of like Biden supporters. And so I'm not denying that that exists. I do think it's a dangerous narrative to then paint all Trump supporters in that way. It's convenient and it makes me feel better about myself, but it's just not the reality. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like, oh my gosh, let's just have dialogue. It's easy. I have a farm in New Hampshire. I have to buy seed and do a lot of other things with farmers up there. And the other farmers are, let's just say, I'm the most progressive person of the people I know in that crew. And I've ended up in conversation with people, challenging conversations. But I don't think they are looking to kill me and hunt me like neo-Nazis. That those people do exist. They're just not the majority of Trump supporters.
So I really appreciate, especially because you know we have, and I hope we will continue to have listeners who represent the full range of the political spectrum. And I really appreciate you acknowledging that. I also want to make space to acknowledge that this question of addressing systemic racism in our country is on the table, is necessary, and is a place where we are deeply divided. And as an African-American woman and public leader, you know, we had Tito Jackson and Ed Lyons. Tito is African-American, Ed's white, last Friday, and Tito said, you know, we need so much more dialogue. How do we stay sustained in that dialogue about systemic racism right now, Reverend Mariama?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like, I'll give an example. There's one particular person that I have bought seed from. And he says about three things per every minute that I find problematic. He labels me a socialist. We go back and forth, right? So the challenge for me is that when we fall into these narratives, we move up the ladder really quickly. And the question is, how can we have dialogue that gets us deeper than our stated positions and our tribal affiliations. So yes, highly problematic. I remember on the flight to Standing Rock, a guy who was explaining to me about why Indigenous people don't have the right to have land. I mean, I have been in conversations with people saying some pretty tough stuff, and I'm not saying we don't have to go there. My challenge is just having competing sides out marching in the street isn't going to move us forward on systemic racism. Just trying to win just one more percent over the other person, I just don't see how we get to the kind of deep change. And I think one other piece that we're really struggling with is we're at a point of deep pivot in this country. I actually think we have a shift that's required of us. Climate change is real. Our system, our structure can't survive. And we're struggling to find our way forward. So Reverend, I don't know if any of us has the full answer.
Reverend Mariama White Hammond, I'm going to have to end us there. Thank you. Thank you. Pastor at New Roots AME Church, thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here.
Pam and Hingham, Keith and Lynn, Katarina and Falmouth, all the callers, thank you for calling in today. We will do more of this. This has been Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.